You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. In Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, director J.J. Abrams returns to attempt to wrap up a story 42 years in the making. As Resistance heroes Poe Dameron and Finn attempt to wage war against the darkness of the First Order, young Jedi Rey ventures into the far reaches of space to face a deeper evil who has returned from the grave ready to expose secrets from her past. In this, the last episode of 2019, Jedi Master Greg Bannock and Mando Arnaldo Reyes return to the show to do battle about fan expectations, the nature of family, and redemption from our past. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. That's what D.O. was all about. Oh my gosh. D.O. is the most unnecessary droid of all time. He does nothing redeeming other than roll around and say occasional words. That's it.
Yeah.
So J.J. can get an acting credit. Anyway. Welcome to Screenfish Radio. I am so glad that you can join us this week as we talk about the supposedly final film in the Skywalker saga, Star Wars Rise of Skywalker. And this week, to talk about this epic film, 40 years in the making, we have an honorary Jedi and Mandalorian themselves, Master Greg Bannock, and Mandalorian, I don't know what the designation is for that, but Arnaldo Reyes, welcome, guys.
I'm just a Mando.
And I, Obi, wanted to be here, and I'm so glad to be.
You see? That's why Mandos don't like Jedi.
Greg's been working on that ever since we invited him to come on this episode.
Not that long, but yeah, it took a little while.
But before we get into the conversation about the film, guys, you are two of the biggest Star Wars fans I know. And I thought tonight, before we... Now, I see Greg is already sort of, like, nervous now here. And I don't know why.
Because the last time we did one, I did bad.
I hope I do good.
I would like to pit you two against each other in a best of seven Star Wars trivia. The rules are simple. I'm going to ask seven questions, or up to seven questions. The first person to score four answers correctly will be the true Jedi Master, if you will. How it will work is this. I'm going to ask each one of you a question, and if you get it wrong, the other person will get a chance to steal it. First one to four is the winner before we talk about the film. So,
Greg, you can go first.
All right.
Oh, thank you, Arnold. I really appreciate that, buddy.
All right. Okay.
No problem.
Your first question is this. How many languages does C-3PO say he can speak?
Oh, shoot. I think it's 6 trillion.
That is not correct. Do you want a chance to steal, Arnaldo?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
These are deep cuts.
Yeah.
That's the easy one, guys.
All right.
And let's just say he can speak over 600 billion languages.
Over 6 million forms of communication.
Oh, I got the alien.
You got the alien. All right.
But I said trill. You know, 42 years into the series with, you know, as things kind of increase and all of this, it becomes 6 trillion. But
so you're saying adjusted for inflation, you were correct.
Yeah.
That's fair. Okay. All right. Okay, Arnaldo, which species stole the plans to the Death Star?
I mean, they were human.
That is not correct.
Yeah, according to Rogue One, he's correct. But according to the original New Hope, it's Bothans. Because many Bothans died in order to get us these plants.
That is correct. That is correct, Greg. You're up 1-0 there. Many Bothans died. Now, I guess it's your question again. Okay. You get the math questions. What are the odds for successfully navigating an asteroid field?
Oh, oh my gosh. What is it? 50 million to one?
Never tell me that. That's what they are.
You are so far off, it's embarrassing. Arnaldo, what do you want to give it a shot here?
100 to one.
3,720 to one.
Yeah, I have no excuse for that. I was just wet.
Yeah. All right, Arnaldo. You got to get you on the board here. Name the pod race in episode one and Anakin's chief rival.
Oh my goodness, I don't even remember the name of the pod race.
You can it was based on where it was located.
It was on Tatooine.
Well, that was a planet. If you were to say that about NASCAR, you would say everyone is the Earth 500. Like that.
episode one and two is ones I would probably get the most wrong because I just didn't pay enough attention to them. So I ain't gonna bow out on this one because I have no clue.
Okay, great.
I can see the alien's face.
Yeah.
I remember I'm being so happy when he died, but I can't remember his
name. You can't remember Sebulba's name?
Oh, Sebulba!
That was the easier of the two. Bunta Eve. All right, okay. This is embarrassing.
To say the least.
Question five. Greg, here we go. Who did Unkar Platt steal the Millennium Falcon from?
Oh, no, because Han had already lost it. Shoot, what's his name? I don't have a shot. I got nothing.
Arnaldo.
Oh, man, this scene is in my head. It's on my tip of the tongue, but...
Duquesne.
Oh, Duquesne.
This is a bit of a trickier one, Arnaldo. You got the other ones. Yeah, I know, that's true. But it's a little bit less specific to the characters, all right? Every single one of the films begins with a slow crawl of graphic and a camera pan down. Which of the episodes is the only one to have the camera pan up?
I want to say episode 5, Empire Strikes Back. I feel like the camera panned up to the starship and not down.
That is not correct. Greg, do you want to give it a go?
Man, I don't pay that much attention. I know they pan. I know they do that. I'm going to say it's episode 6.
It is Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones.
Okay, guys. Question 7. Greg's up 1-0 out of...
I remember they were both in spies.
When Yoda confronts Luke on Achu or whatever it is, Achto...
God bless you.
Thank you. What does Yoda tell Luke is the greatest teacher?
Oh, I know this.
I know this one also. It's Greg's turn, though. Answer.
Is it? Failure is the greatest
failure teacher. Failure is correct.
But I would say we both get a point for that. So I only won by 1 point.
There we go. I'll take it.
It was close. It was close. You may all continue your training with the younglings. Go ahead.
Yeah, as long as Anakin doesn't show up, then we're fine.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It depends when you're going through your training. If you're starting when they're still, sending out orders 62 and 63, you know, you're still good.
We got some time.
Star Wars Rise of Skywalker picks up when the surviving resistance faces the First Order once more as Rey, Finn, and Poe Dameron's journey continues. With the power and knowledge of generations behind them, the final battle commences as an ancient enemy rises from the grave to stir up controversy and conflict between the already foes. As always, and especially for this film, just a reminder that this podcast is rated S for spoilers. Our conversation is free to discuss any aspect of the film, and you may want to avoid that until you've seen the film, but otherwise, listen on. Rise of Skywalker, what did you think?
Honestly, and I might get hated for this, I loved it. I thought it was great. I honestly think it's impossible to match, after 42 years of hype and to make everybody happy. And I know The Last Jedi was very divisive for some people for different reasons. But honestly, I really thought that The Rise of Skywalker ended... You know, well, for what it did, I think it closes off the saga well, but also leaves it open for new things. And, you know, I overall, I really enjoyed it.
I'm in the same boat as Greg. I enjoyed it. I loved it. I'm not ashamed to say I cried. I laughed. Cried some more. There was some things in there that I would have personally wished they wouldn't have changed. But I'm in the boat of one who really enjoyed The Last Jedi. So it's not, I can see where the critics on this one are more where they love The Last Jedi, they don't like this one, and I can understand why. But overall, the fan service that was done in this one, I think the story and how they closed out that saga was a fitting end.
And
we both know that Steve didn't like it.
And I have to say that I truly love you both. And I did not love it. I did not love it. But I want to be clear on a few things before I say this. My issues with it were not about the story. My issues were not about the characters. My issues were not about the tone. My issue was that I thought it was truly badly written. And I'll explain it. I'll explain what I mean. So I'm not sitting there saying, I am one of the ones that loved The Last Jedi and loved Force Awakens. Like, without question, I thought they were really good. I didn't care about the fact that Force Awakens, quote unquote, retreaded so much of the old material. I loved that. It had the right spirit, the right energy, the right tone. Last Jedi I thought was really challenging. My problem with this lies in the fact that it feels like J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy had a plan for three films. And then after the second film that changed some things they gave Johnson a ton of freedom. And again, I love the film. He still kept with his plan and rushed two movies into 2 hours and 20 minutes. That was my issue. I felt like I was watching the original trilogy on 1.5 speed. Like, there were scenes in there, like the scene when they're out in the desert. The tone was great. The energy was great. It was a lot of fun. Everything was on fast forward. They could have had some really great set pieces, set up some things. And it just felt like there was no communication to me. So I'm not being nitpicky on the story. I don't want to be that guy who's nitpicky on the story. I'm not going to sit here and complain like everybody did after Jedi because Luke was grumpy I love the twists. I love the idea that she's Palpatine's daughter. I thought that was fun. But like for example, Kylo Ren's switch to me was so rapid.
Yeah.
There's no in Jedi... There's hints of Vader's conflict before his switch. See what I mean? It just felt like they took two movies to me and squished them. And that was the thing that really bugged me.
I don't think you're wrong. I think you're correct. And for whether it was JJ's decision or the great and powerful Disney's decision to do that, yeah, I kind of felt the same thing. Like, I was really hoping with the set pieces, like, I'm like, okay, is Rey about to fight the Knights of Ren earlier on or certain things? But I also felt like for them to really have done what I think they really were wanting to do, it was going to be like a Hobbit. Okay, instead of one movie, we're going to be three. And they just couldn't do that. And so it's like, well, then we're going to have to cut a whole bunch of stuff. So I'm sure the, like, elite 30th edition director's cut, blah, 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 20 years from now, will be the version of the film that we all wished it was in 2019.
Yeah. One thing I know, like I said, like being in the costume clubs, you get to meet people that know people. So there's a big misconception that Disney has their hands a lot in this, and it's not. Lucasfilm still operates kind of like Marvel and Pixar, where, they just tell Disney, this is what we're going to do, and Disney says, here's the money. And so they operate that way. I think I get your point in the rush thing, because when I heard when I first heard about the runtime, that was my biggest fear. Because to me, I felt this film should have a runtime of Endgame status.
That's
because
it.
That's how it should have gone.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and even though overall I enjoyed the film, I did have two gripes with the film. And, you know, one of the gripes was that I didn't get any expansion. Now, whether that's Rian Johnson's fault from The Last Jedi because we didn't see them there, or it's just because we didn't get more time, you know, I wanted to see more of the Knights of Ren, except other than them just creeping around corners like, you know, stalkers, and that's it. Like, you know, show me something. Why were these guys revered to be so big and bad, you know, apprentices of Kylo Ren? And the only thing I got of them were very mediocre fighting against one guy when they got their tails wiped, pretty much. I wanted to see more of them. I wanted to see them actually take on, you know, the resistance, whether it was in that planet you said, a desert planet where they, you know, where that scene, which I thought, I mean, the scene with Rey and the lightning coming down, I thought that was just one of the most impactful epic scenes ever I've seen in Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that you have two powerful Jedis, you know, or people with the Force holding a prison transport in midair, and then the lightning that comes out of her hand. Like, even if you didn't have an inkling that she was, you know, Palpatine's, that moment you were like, oh, okay, now. They haven't said it yet, but now I get that. But before that, I would have loved to see an encounter with the Knights between that group and the Knights of Ren. You know, and the only other gripe I have with the film is that I'm okay with her being a Palpatine.
Yeah.
But I felt that because of what Rian Johnson did in The Last Jedi, I was also okay with her being nobody, and that someone, that the Force can pick somebody out of nowhere, and, you know, kind of like, you know, just Jesus picking, you know, a fisherman and saying, you know, you're going to be one of my greatest disciples. Like, you know, I was okay with her just being that and not having a bloodline attached to her.
See,
but I'm also okay with her being a Palpatine. So it's kind of like 50-50 there.
See, I'm here cheering you on, and Greg is shaking his head, and I want...
Honestly, no, I think your point is valid. I saw the movie with a friend, and I spoke to someone else who had your opinion about, like, his biggest gripe with it was, you know, why couldn't Rey be a nobody? And my thought is, because you don't want to be a nobody. Like, everyone goes, no, I want to be Luke Skywalker. No, you don't. You want to be a Jedi. You don't want to be Luke, who has to lose his father, who has to not know his mother, who has to do all of this. You want your main characters to have somewhat of a story. And so I think for when they did in Last Jedi, I love the scene at the end of Last Jedi where we see little boy, like, having Force power. Because it's like, yeah, we know there are other Force-sensitive people out there, and it would be great and awesome to try to see, like, you know, are we ever going to see, like, a school of the Jedi? Which, again, for me as well, like, growing up as a kid in the 90s and stuff, we had the comic books, we had the written novels and everything else. And then when Disney bought Lucasfilm, and then they went, okay, all of that stuff that you thought was canon, we're just going to move and now call it Legends, and so it doesn't count. And it was kind of soul-crushing for me a little bit, because it's like, no, I liked knowing all this lore. And then they started feeding some of the stuff back in. It's like, Darth Bane exists. Thrain exists. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, audience, it's just, I was super into the extra other stuff. But,
Darth Bane fought Batman, didn't he?
No! Oh, my gosh. No, Darth Bane sets up the rule of two, so it's the idea that there's only ever two Sith because it kept them secret and all of this, and the idea of power into one, which, again, really ties in well with this movie, especially towards the climax of, you know, you have the 1,000 generations of Jedi and then the 1,000 generations of Sith kind of fighting together for big final climax. And so even the idea of, okay, we're bringing back the Emperor, that's not a new story. And again, it's a super deep cut, but there is a series of books from the early 90s called The Jedi Prince that is woefully similar to what ends up happening with Rey's story arc. It's there's this young guy named Ken who grows up by himself. He can talk with droids. He eventually starts learning the Force and picks it up very quickly. He seeks out Luke Skywalker. He finds out, spoiler alert, he's Palpatine's grandson. And then Luke tells him at the end that, you know, your heritage does not need to define who you are. And it's just like, well, that's a story that seems very familiar. And is that a bad thing? No. And so when Ronaldo was saying, it's like, you know, I love that Ray was, no, we want to know who these people are. One of the most enduring characters of the original saga is Boba Fett, who basically says nothing in the first time we ever see him, dies very, very quickly he goes into the Sarlacc pit, and again, in Legends, he gets out in Return of the Jedi, and shows up again, also in Empire Strikes Back. But we're so enamored with this guy. Why? Because we know nothing about him. And so the idea in The Last Jedi where it's like, Rey's parents are nobodies, I was like, no. And so that was the one thing where JJ's like, yeah, we're going to change that. I was like, yes, see, please change that.
See, I knew he was going to change it, but I loved the fact in the last film that anyone could be a Jedi, because it was just sort of like this thing that it was no, like the whole nine movies is about these like three guys, you know, really. And then Rey is thrown into the mix. And I loved the fact that Johnson opened it up. See, again, I don't want to debate this because then it becomes about the last movie. But at the same time, what we have here, I knew he was going to retcon all that stuff. I didn't care that he did. But like, for example, this is what it doesn't always work. But imagine if Avengers Endgame or the Avengers 2 movies, you know, Disney said to Kevin Feige, you know what? We're not going to give you the 300 mil to make the two movies, so do it all in 2 hours. And next thing you know, people are dying. There's a snap at the 1 hour mark, and then we're going to travel through time, and we're here now, and we're here. It just happens so quickly, and that was why my issue with the film had nothing to do with the film. What made me maddest is that I liked the story, but like the Knights of Ren showed up for the first time in the opening scene. You know, everybody's saying, they got to be in it. They got to be in it. Well, that's all well and good. But it's almost like what was going on with the DC movies. It's like, okay, guys, we need you to make movies. So you make one like this and you make one like this and just, and we'll fix it here. And they're completely separate. And that was my issue. So then JJ basically made a sequel to his movie.
Ignored the one before it.
So, like, even if, you know, because I hear that Johnson went to JJ when he was doing Force Awakens and said, here, shoot this scene. We're going to do this scene here. Can you take, shoot this scene and tag it into the end of your movie with when Rey's handing out the saber to Luke, right? And then, you know, even if they had come and said, because again, now Trevorrow was supposed to direct, and then after Johnson, they threw it all away. He still got story credit. And they said, you know what, can you hint, like maybe have a scene where Kylo's there and the Palpatine laugh comes across the scene. It's like, oh my gosh, he's alive. It would have made more sense in this movie. Like, this is the thing. Like, they just threw everything into a blender and forced it down. Poe has two different character arcs in the same movie.
Finn Force sensitive or not?
No, that they've asked JJ, hey JJ, what was he gonna say? And he said, he was gonna say he's Force sensitive. But really? You're dying and you're gonna yell?
That's
not what he was gonna say.
That's what JJ says he was gonna say.
Now come on, JJ. You know that's not what he was gonna say.
But I mean, it's just like, again, I'm even fine with that story choice. Let it happen. It happened too quick.
He got put in the friend zone, though.
He was in everyone's friend zone at the end. At the end, they all three of them hug.
Yeah.
You know what I thought was hilarious? And again, now this is just being nitpicky. I thought this was funny. He saves the universe with, I don't even know what her name is, the woman that he finds that used to be a stormtrooper. Lando's daughter.
Who may or may not be Lando's daughter.
JJ answered that too. Yes, she is.
I think it was Jaina.
So like that. He saves the universe with Jaina, and then the world is safe, and he just walks past her, you know, and goes and hugs Rey. It's like, could you at least, like, high-five her or something? Like, you just spent the last... Oh, see that?
Yeah, but no, but think about it. Finn also had Rose, like, in The Last Jedi. Sorry.
Oh, don't even get me started on what they did to Rose, all right? What they did to Rose in this movie was inexcusable.
Yeah, and now I understand why... they didn't really promote any merchandise with her because JJ pretty much put her in the backseat, and that sucks.
Yeah, I liked Rose a lot. I thought she was a great character.
Yeah.
What? Okay, so this begs the question then, guys. I mean, we sort of hinted at this before when I was talking or when we were messaging, but I mean, what are expectations for this film? Because the whole thing about it. Is, I mean, I know, you're trying to sum up 42 years, and the backlash of Jedi scared everyone. People are still mad about it. There were people trying to ban Knives Out because Rian Johnson made it.
Yeah.
Just because he made Luke a grumpy old man.
Which totally makes sense, but they don't pay attention to Luke's character in the original. So.
That's because they've already written their fanfic, and Luke's fine. But I mean, like, so what do you think the film should have been trying to do? Because I've heard the term fan service here, left, right, and center. And in a franchise like this, a certain amount of fan service, I think, is important. But where's the boundary? What do you think?
I honestly, my thought on this, and it was to a friend of mine who really dislike this movie for certain elements that we've already discussed. As I said this, I said, look, you wanted something new? And he goes, yeah. And I said, no, you don't. I said, you don't. What you really want is the same with pretty new packaging. And by that, I mean you want new ships, you want big battles, you want new characters that still fundamentally deal with the same duality, but like are just enough different. Like the relationship with Finn and Poe and Rey is very, very similar to Han and Luke and Leia, but it's different. And it's like, yeah, but it's still essentially the same three. Because it's like, who of the main characters of the new trilogy dies?
Oh.
And it's like, right.
Yeah.
Right. And again, we'll talk about that later. But it's just like, the thing is and I especially think in a world where We've gone through a series of movies in a lot of things where it's just been getting darker and darker and darker. I think some people want, like, look, I want a feel-good movie. Yeah, I want the stakes to be high. Yeah, I want this. But I want everyone to live. I you know, yes, I want them to sacrifice, but can they still come back? And it's like, yeah, they kind of can. And you know, so I think you have to balance fan service as well as understanding, look, at the end of the day, they're going to make more TV shows or toys or whatever, or more stories or more books or more comics, and they want to keep the characters going. I mean, look, Clone Wars as a movie, not a great movie, but then there's the television show, then there's the other things. Why? Because we liked seeing Jedi fight. And that was a perfect excuse to, like, let's really flesh that out. And so I think they had to really do a fine line between we're going to keep a little bit different, but we're going to essentially try to do the same thing we did with the original trilogy, which is a classic fight of good versus evil.
And that's where I think the expectations for those that didn't like The Last Jedi, they were expecting a train wreck, and they were like, no, you know, we're done. For those, this is where I said, like, the critics, you see the opposite on this film that you saw with The Last Jedi, where the critics loved The Last Jedi, but the fan base was, you know, audience score was half. Because, like Greg said, people say they want something new, but when you give them something new, they don't like it because it's not the same. So, and the critics loved The Last Jedi because it was not the same, and it was something new. they hate this film because J.J. Abrams pretty much reverted back to the same formula and the same system, and that's what this film has. So the expectations for some were that let's continue that road of something new, where for others it was bring us back to that original formula. So part of this film, or the majority of this film, was, I think, a decision made by Lucasfilm to go back to the original formula to appease a fan base that had backed off. And maybe we can blame the Solo film for not making so much money, of them thinking, oh, well, we doing something new didn't work with this fan base, so we need to go back to the original one. Which is probably why they brought J.J. Abrams back to begin with. Because they wanted to go back to that original formula, keep the original formula. This was very much as it was a slightly different, this was very much Return of the Jedi in all shapes and forms. Because it had a lot of similarities to it in the forms of, you know, what they were doing, what they needed to do in order to get to the final battle. And even the final battle, as great as it was, you know, it still had the same similarities of, you know, sacrifice of one for the other. In this case, it felt more like a Romeo and Juliet type sacrifice going back and forth in that. Which is what they did, and I see you shaking your head, Steve.
Yeah.
But yeah, it comes down to that: is they you're either going to. I saw someone, one of my friends, had posted this, and this is your fan base going into the Star Wars. You know, fan A is going to be excited over the film. This film was everything for them. You know, fan B is, I hated The Last Jedi, so I am not going to like this one, and I'm no longer going to like anything, no matter what you do. And that's fan B. Fan C is going to be like, JJ didn't use the script that I mailed him in the mail, so therefore I don't like this film. You know, professional critics are going to be like, oh, it's meh, it's Star Wars. And then you have the general audience that are going to be like, oh, well, I didn't know sound travels in space. So it comes back down to your typical Star Wars film where the fan service is there and the fans are excited. The critics are like, meh, it's Star Wars. And those that already hated them and blamed Disney and Kathleen Kennedy and all this, it's all Disney's fault, it's all Kathleen Kennedy's fault, not knowing that Kathleen Kennedy was chosen by George Lucas, and everybody running Lucasfilm is all the people George Lucas put to run Lucasfilm, and Disney hasn't changed anything in their hierarchy yet.
Yeah.
That comes down to, you know, your expectations were either met or not.
She's already said, I think she knows it's coming, because she's already said that, well, when she steps down, eventually it'll be Filioni and Favreau, or that may be the ones that take the ball. But see, here's the interesting thing, is that, you know, you talk about critics. Force Awakens, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. Last Jedi, 91% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, people bought into Force Awakens. J.J. knocked it out of the park because, sure, he gave you the same thing and it was a shiny new package. But it felt somehow fresh because we hadn't had that in the prequel trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing to me was that even Lucas came out and he said, well, you know, when I made it, every film was different and original. And people were like, see. And it was like, this is just ridiculous.
The same people that ran him off now, like, give him praise.
I know. It's hilarious. And then Last Jedi comes out and it's so different and divisive. But, I mean, it's a true character piece. Like, there is a fascinating look at these character journeys throughout Last Jedi. You can debate about the energy of the film, and the energy of the film is totally different than The Force Awakens and the original trilogy and all that stuff. And this film, when it opens with Kylo Ren on his ship going to find the Emperor, And then they had this quest to find, you know, the triangle, whatever, pyramid things or something. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is a bit Return of the Jedi, but it also feels like something different to me. But then it was more of a, I guess every one of them is somewhat of a quest, but it felt like it was going in a direction. It had a bit of life to it and energy, but it dropped everything. To me, it really is truly just about the writing of the movie. Like, it hit all the story points. And it's funny, like, the expectations to me, it's so interesting because, I mean, I'm not even blaming Disney for this. I'm actually blaming Lucasfilm because I think they got scared. And they've proven they can do different things. You see that with The Mandalorian. If they take their time, you know, Mandalorian is the hottest thing for the last 2 months. That's what everyone's talking about. Between Baby Yoda, which is the marketing, and the story of The Mandalorian, people are in because they're taking their time. But they got scared, and they tried to make this grand narrative. And by the end, and this breaks my heart that I'm comparing this franchise to this. It goes all Matrix Revolutions. Do you remember this?
It's not that bad.
No. Think about it. The end of Revolutions, you've got Keanu Reeves facing off against Agent Smith with 1,000 Agent Smiths all around him.
Correct.
Not interfering, but just cheering him on. Meanwhile, you've got this other fight where they're just fighting you've got a small ground crew, which is every Star Wars movie. I'm not saying it's different. Like, I'm watching it, in Revolutions, I just didn't care about the people. And I didn't, the characters, they just weren't there. But I felt like they were trying so hard, not just to give you the fans what they want, because I knew there were going to be throwbacks. There should have been throwbacks. Endgame is a best of. It is a greatest hits of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They literally take you back to your favorite moments by traveling through time. Like, it is the same thing. It's a greatest hits. I was expecting that, but it was just like everywhere. To me, that wasn't trying to please the fans. To me, that wasn't the fault of trying to, quote, please the fans. It was afraid of losing the fans, and that was different. Like, if it's truly the last film of the series, this may sound nitpicky. I'm not going to nitpick on it. I'm trying not to nitpick on story points, but you could have killed off 3PO and Chewbacca.
Yeah.
But that to me seemed like they were trying to make a safe adjustment. Don't worry, okay. He's fine.
But, like, the way that it was set up to kill 3PO made perfect sense to me. You can't kill Chewbacca by just,
true.
He was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Like, there were, again, in the Legends, Chewbacca does eventually die. But, like, he's on a planet that is breaking apart. He roars in defiance as literally a moon comes and crushes him. Because it's like, what's going to kill Chewbacca? An entire moon. And it's if he's got to go, that's pretty epic. And so even as I'm seeing it, and again, that is such a fantastic scene.
Yeah,
especially
love
when
that
you think
scene.
Earlier on, like, as I'm watching Rey train, and she throws the lightsaber, and I'm looking at her face, and I was like, you know, in the mainline movies, the only people that throw lightsabers are the dark side.
Yeah.
And so, like, and again, especially because of The Last Jedi and because of her connection with Kylo, each trying to convert each other. And I was just like, this is an interesting inner struggle that she's having. And she refuses to take Luke's saber originally when she wants to go. And then for her to release the lightning, I was like, that's brilliant. And I was like, and I know she thinks he's dead. And I immediately went, there's no way Chewbacca's dead. I was like, I don't know how they're going to get him out. And then part of you goes, well, it's such a throwaway when Hux goes, by the way, there was another transport. It's just like, for example, the end with the fact of having Ben Solo being dead, and you go, but why couldn't he live? It's like, it's the same reason why Vader couldn't live. Because you can't have one other person go, hey, I know I'm the hero of this, but I promise you, this guy who's murdered, you know, an untold number of people is actually okay now. No, they would be in prison forever. They have to die. They have to. And was Ben Solo's character arc too quick of a turn? Absolutely. But again, how many hours of this movie are we going to have?
But that's my issue with the film, right? Is they just did too, everything was too quick. That's it.
Yeah. I disagree on the Ben part only because we saw his struggle in the previous film. Like, if you came into this film and you didn't see The Last Jedi, then I would get, like, why did he turn so quick? But because we saw his struggle, the beginning of The Last Jedi, where he wouldn't fire upon the ship because he knew Leia was in there. And to the turning point of him was really Leia. And sidebar, I did not expect Leia in so many scenes.
Yeah.
And it was such a wonderful job by them. And I didn't expect that scene with Han Solo also. No. So to me, that's why his conversion made sense to me, because I saw him hesitate for his mom. His hatred, now, this goes back to, like Greg says, books. If anyone read the Leia book, I forget the name, but it's the Disney published book where it's before, you know, Force Awakens, after Return of Jedi. Han is Han. He's always out. He's always, you know, Ben is out training with Luke, you know, but, you know, Leia is trying to be a senator and all that. Ben's connection was always to Leia, where he had this emptiness with his dad, because his dad was always taking off on adventures, where his connection was more with Leia. So it made sense that it was Leia's final, him knowing that Leia used whatever energy she had left to stop him from killing Rey.
Right.
Because he probably would have went over the edge and just done it, knowing that she wasn't going to turn, and he was like, fine, then I'm going to take you out. And having Rey heal him, and then Han showed up, all of that made sense to me, because I saw the struggle in him before. I saw the struggle in him now. He's always been conflicted. We've had him conflicted for three films now.
Yeah, that's true.
And now that the one person he actually still loved is gone, and she's gone because she used whatever she had left to stop him. To me, his conversion made perfect sense there, because, hey, that's your mom, man.
Yeah.
You know, that was your mom, and that paternal love that he thought he never had, he remembered, it is there. And for Rey to heal him when she didn't need to, she could have just taken off. I think that opened up, and it goes back to, you know, love is such a powerful, powerful force that no matter how far you're on the dark side, you saw it with Vader, you see it with Kylo. Love wins.
You know, I actually started to just jump back in, but yeah, you know, I really love that. And I think it does tie into the prequel trilogy as well, because again, we have Anakin's fear is losing those he loves. And he's seduced by this idea of Palpatine of, you know, good is a relative term. It's what side you're on. And by the way, I can save those you love, but it's this very selfish, I'm going to take what I want to keep what I want with me. And so we even see, like, Palpatine's version of coming back to life is not the kind of life I think any of us would want to have. So for example, like, we see, you know, Luke and Yoda and all of them throughout it, you know, as Force ghosts, and they still seem like them. But as Palpatine, you're just like, what? Like, you're like a zombie evil thing. Like, what are you? And again, as Christians, as someone who says, you know, when Jesus says, like, if you want to save your life, you're going to lose it, but if you lose it for my sake, you'll find it. And this idea of what is life really about? Is it about what you have now and what you can get? Or is love truly about what are you willing to sacrifice for those you care about? And you know, and all of that, and a mother's love, or loving the ideal and completing the task, even if it's going to give all of you up, loving your enemy. All of these elements are there. And I thought, from a Christian term, like, if the original three are somewhat Buddhist in terms of the force, it's like these have a lot of really big Christian themes in this latest trilogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I appreciate about this film, I mean, certainly it's a case throughout all of the films, really, but, you know, you talk about love, but the way that they handle family is specifically thrown to the forefront here. Not just sacrificing for one, for somebody, but, you know, or for others. And for the record, I love that part. I love the way they use the force healing. They've never shown that before, and it was funny, again.
Untrue!
When
Luke in New Hope, when Luke is first hit by Tusken Raiders, they didn't have the technology, Obi-Wan comes up and touches him. He's not checking his forehead for a fever. He's healing. So that is another time, because I knew someone was going to say that. I thought it was you, Steve. I predicted that. One other time, and it's in A New Hope, and it's a throwaway scene, but Obi-Wan does heal Luke. It's just not as graphically intensive as it was
in this right movie. Of course. Well, that's fair. But again, like,
and baby Yoda did it first on the episode 7 of The Mandalorian.
Oh, no, I'm not that far ahead, no spoilers. but family is really thrown to the forefront here. Of course, Rey's parentage and whatnot, and we talk about her with being a Palpatine. Even like I said, even though it was badly I felt it was badly written, but I do see what you're saying about the conflict in Kylo. I still think it was a bit abrupt in this film, but I do see that there was a pattern forming. This idea of family, I was wondering how the two of you feel that came to the forefront, where of how family is intended to look in this particular film.
I think it's, if you go with the saga completely, the Skywalker saga was always about choosing who is your family. Like, from Obi-Wan telling Anakin, you are my brother, you know, it's that, to Vader wanting to change Luke because Luke is his offspring, and Luke saying, just because I'm your offspring doesn't mean I have to do the exact same thing you did. Even though he went up to the line. I think that's one of the things that, you know, going back to Last Jedi, where people are like, oh, Luke was grumpy. Luke went up to the line in the original series. He just never crossed it. So this whole thing of, and then going back with Leia and everything, the parentage, you know, your bloodline, and then when Luke tells Rey, yeah, you know, I know you're a Palpatine. Leia knew it also. And she was like, she trained me? Like, because that doesn't matter. You don't have to choose what your ancestors chose. You don't have to choose what your bloodline says you should choose. You have your own choice. And she saw, you know, she saw who you really are. You are not what he is. And, you know, I love the fact that, you know, we go back and they finally show, you know, that Leia did train to be a Jedi. Leia did, you know, it wasn't just out of nowhere that Leia can have force powers or anything. And like Greg said, you know, people who've read the Legends books, they know about Leia and, you know, being a Jedi and things like that. And how she walked away because of family, because she knew that her role was different. It wasn't the role of what her dad or brother took. Her role was a different path. And, you know, and here we see that, you know, from Poe to Finn to Rose, and I think just Star Wars in general, that family isn't necessarily just your blood. It's, you know, it's those around you, those close friends, you know, Chewie is family. You know, Chewie is family to them. Like that scene, which I'm so, that's why I'm so happy that Chewie didn't die, because then we wouldn't have had that emotional scene when they get back and they tell him that Leia's gone. Like, you know,
I tried to get the medal. Yeah,
when he got the medal, like, oh, I said, finally, they finally gave him his medal. But it was just like, you know, those scenes, the C-3PO scene, like, even though the trailers had it, it was still impactful there because you found, you got the context of what was going on, what was happening. And for a droid to sit there and say, you guys are my friends, because he's been through that, to see that even, you know, C-3PO, R2, BB-8, you know, they're more than just droids in this saga. They're just not, you know, even in Rogue One, like, it was heartbreaking when K2SO was getting shot up and saying, Satan, you know, Sager's. Like, these droids are more than just machines.
Yeah.
And we see that family element from the droids when R2 is like, what do you mean you don't know me? R2 saved some of his, backed up some of his memory, you know, and just happened to have it there to bring C-3PO at least somewhat back. You know, that, the whole essence of family, and that it's more than blood, that it's more than just, you know, who your ancestors was. You don't have to follow their path. If their path led to darkness, you have the right to make your own choice, and there's goodness in all, and we can all be redeemed.
You know, for me, I always think the famous phrase that we always get wrong, which is blood is thicker than water. And it's like, that's not the original phrase. The original phrase is the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb, meaning the friends and the family that you make by forging friendships and all of that is actually more important than sharing, you know, DNA or heritage or whatever. And I think it's really important. And so even kind of looking at, you know, C-3PO's arc, it's a throwaway line, but it's huge to me. The idea that when he gets his memory back and he's like, I'm going on Rey's first mission. That's like, you never wanted to go anywhere with danger. Like, in the original trilogy, he does not want to be in danger. And now that he's excited to go, I was like, I know it's a throwaway line. I know he's being, like, resurrected in a way and all of that, and however people feel about that. But I was like, but there's a character arc. There's a huge change. And, yeah, like, as you were saying, like, the change of droids. And one of my favorite lines in this whole film was when Rey finally admits to Ben, she goes, you know, I wanted to take your hand. I wanted to take Ben's hand. Mm-hmm. And it was like, even in the midst of he's like, I am so far gone. And that was his whole thing, right? I'm too far gone. Yeah, I know I shouldn't have done these things, but I'm too far gone. So I'm going to use all the dark side I can to do as much what he thinks is, I guess, good, right? I'm going to defeat the Emperor by using the dark side because I'm irredeemable. And to be found to be like, I've seen inside you because we have this bond, and what I see inside you is still Ben, is incredible to me. And it's incredible to so many people that, and I think it's so important. And again, this is a fun movie. This is not trying to be super deep, but there are so many people that I think are so defined by, you did this one thing and that is who you are. And it's like, you don't have to be that person. You, because of who your family is, does not mean you have to then be this. And again, like, you know, now thinking back on it, it's like, how much pressure does it have to be Ben Solo? Hey, you know who your parents are? You know who your grandfather is? How do you live up to that ever?
You know
your uncle is? And by the way, you're going to train under him, and every single day, you and all of your friends are going to be compared because that's your uncle. And it's just like, I can't imagine that kind of pressure. And then you have this girl who comes out of nowhere, who doesn't know who she is, who thinks she's been abandoned by her parents, who, again, super rushed, but is really, they gave her up to save her. And she can't know that. Or she repressed it, or however they decided. Again, it's super fast. But they do it to essentially save her. And you know, I think it's so important because I have friends who are adopted and things, and you know, I've asked them, and you know, even as adults, it's like, okay, you had a wonderful upbringing, not with your biological parents. Do you ever wonder who your parents were? And they go, every single day. And so I thought, you know, yes, this is a popcorn movie. Yes, this is a fun movie. But at a time when I think people feel so fractured for whatever reason, and, you know, to find that you can make your own family, that you do not have to be defined by your mistakes or your failures or by who your parents are, and to know who you are, and that journey is just – it was so incredible. And, yeah, I'll admit my eyes were sweating during times of this movie for some of those reasons.
To me, I think the chronology of the films makes a big difference. We're actually going to do something different this summer. We did this with the youth with the Marvel movies where we watched them in order. We're going to watch them in order of chronology with the youth. And so like 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, you know,
that's how they should be watched.
Yeah. Let's not get into that debate. It's obviously right. But anyway, the reason I say that is because I think family shifted huge. You know, Arnaldo, when you're talking about that, you're like, oh, it's always been key. You know, you're like my brother. In the first trilogy, in the 70s, they're close like family, but the family is blood. Nobody ever refers to Han as family, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong on that.
No, but they haven't.
I don't think they explicitly say it. You're right that Anakin says to Obi-Wan, you're like my brother, you know, or, you know, like they're...
No, Obi-Wan says it to Anakin.
Obi-Wan says it to Anakin that you're like my brother, of course. There's an equality there, and this is 20 years later. The relationships have shifted a little bit, but it's still not used. Now they're throwing the word family around like a Fast and the Furious movie in this one. But I think... And actually, the more I think about it, that's an apt comparison. But I think the whole notion of family is completely different. Because in this particular film, they consider each other family. I think that's why the three of them hug. Other than the fact that it was just a convenient way to get everybody wrapped up in one storyline there. There is a consideration of family there. And Rey actually adopting the Skywalker name... I did like that. Again, rushed, writing, covered all that. But the thing I did like about that is the fact that family now, she is now in the Skywalker line with no bloodline to it. She is now a Skywalker. The Ben Solo comment, the I want to take Ben's hand, that's a good comment too. But again, it's about the... Now, I think what we've seen, it's different than it would have been in the 70s. It was about, this is your family. You can't really change them, but they can be redeemed. You know, can they change their ways? There can be reconciliation and restitution in your family. Bloodline. And we see in the prequel trilogies that changes a little bit. It's more brotherly tension. But in this one, it really reflects our cultural idea right now that who your family is, you can choose. Because here's the truth. Rey does turn against her bloodline. She rejects her family. Luke does not. Yeah. Luke goes back to try and redeem his family. He goes back for his father. He says, I can feel the conflict in you. Let go of your hate. Now, Palpatine, there's like no character arc for him whatsoever. He's just the bad guy who's hooked up to a bunch of wires. So there's no conflict. He's just got to be the epitome of 1,000 years of Sith. He's just evil. But she doesn't try to fix it. She just says, screw you. I am not your child. Which is very different than what you saw in the original trilogy. Also, it's a different story. But I'm saying, I think the whole notion of family has shifted culturally, where family is based entirely on... Or not entirely. Family is based much more on relationship as opposed to bloodline. And I think that's a healthy way to do it. I mean, like, I'm a pastor, so I rest a lot on this idea that we're drawn together, adopted as sons and daughters of Christ. But it does reflect a cultural shift. And I think that's pretty interesting myself.
Yeah, I do really think that this new trilogy does really reflect on the change in our culture for a number of reasons. And in some ways, I think that's appropriate. I also think that when, you know, 30 years from now, when we look back on this film, we'll look at it differently than we do today. And how will it be different? Who knows? I mean, well, I'm not about to predict what the next 30 years are going to look like. But I do think that, you know, the core elements of the movie of good's going to defeat evil. Why? Because we're together and we're willing to sacrifice if we have to. But we're not going to just throw away people. They're not just things to be used and tossed away. And that's why we're going to win. Why? Because even though they look more powerful, as Lando loves to say, there are more of us than there are of them. And isn't that how fear often traps us, is this idea of saying, I'm bigger, you're all alone. And it's like, well, actually, we're not all alone, but fear's trying to make us think that we're isolated and by ourselves and no one feels the way I do and no one can know what it's like to be me. And if they knew who I really was, they would deny me. And this film really highlights, it's like, that's you know, everyone has those feelings and you do not have to be rejected because of either something you've done or who you think you are because of something you've done or what someone else has said to you or who your parents are biologically.
Yeah, Kylo Ren wouldn't survive cancel culture. And I do just want to highlight one thing you said. It's not about one thing you've done wrong. The guy has killed millions of people. So his redemption arc.
You're right. He didn't do one thing. But he did a lot of things. Yeah, you're right.
He did some stuff. He did some stuff. But again, I'm just saying, I agree with you. I think that even strengthens the depth of a redemptive arc in his case. Like, he tries to make it right by he literally makes a different case. They take the earlier scene where he slaughters his father and flip it on its ear. He makes that change. There is a redemptive characteristic, and that does go through multiple trilogies, of course, although not the prequels, because the prequels are literally about setting up the bad guy. There's really no redemption.
Yeah, they're kind of trapped.
No redemption,
yeah. There, yeah, they've got themselves in a box. But
and again, like, when we think of the whole thing of Kylo Ren, and you're right, it's not one thing, it's a whole lot of things. And so it's like, what could ever be enough to redeem something like that? It would have to be something incredible. And again, I'm a pastor too, and so again, the idea of Christ's blood being enough is an overwhelming, awesome, incredible, mind-blowing thing to consider. And that being said, it's like perfect power being vulnerable and sacrifice, as opposed to being, I can do incredible things like as Palpatine does. You want to see real power? Let me throw my hands up and as an individual stop an entire fleet by depowering them by shooting lightning up into the sky.
Sky beam. Sorry, go ahead.
Like, you know, whatever it is. And you know, you can call it a MacGuffin that it's always a Death Star, whether it's a Death Star or a Super Death Star or a bunch of mini Death Stars that are kind of Star Destroyers but kind of not Star Destroyers. And it's just like, yeah, okay, but he's got to use an element of fear. Blowing up a planet's a pretty big way of causing fear. And then it's like, well, who's he defeated by? His granddaughter, who's really just figured out who she is, and by someone who, by all intents and purposes, is barely a Jedi Knight. And the guy, Kylo Ren, who was evil and is now trying to be good at the last minute. And it's like, so how are you going to do this, Kylo? How are you going to do all the cool things you can do but not use the dark side? Because you know how dangerous that is. You two are going to stop the Emperor? Like, Palpatine even says it. He's like, Luke had his dad. And it's like, who do you have, Rey? And then Kylo is quickly shunned away. Like, he's blown away. And it looks like he's totally gone, never going to come back. And it's like, so what is real power? And you know, I think Palpatine is the perfect example of earthly selfishness and indulgence of saying real power is I can do what I want when I want and I can manipulate people and no one is going to stop me. But in the end, we see actually that's doesn't last. Like, you know, Palpatine's lasted for a long time. He was the senator. He's all the way back in the very, not chronologically, but in terms of the story arc, like episode one, we see him, and here he is in episode nine, and he's still there, and secretly he was actually the one who controlled Snoke and sent those messages to Kylo as either Vader or Snoke and all of this other stuff. And it's like, yeah, but you're gone now. Like, you're, everything you have, no matter how many times you do it, it's gone. You know, the first Death Star is gone. The second Death Star is gone. The Super Death Star is gone. The First Order is going to be gone. And now you are finally gone, and your very, very throne is gone. And what is it defeated by? Sacrifice. Not by people who don't have any power, but by people who are willing to say, my true power lies in being willing to lay it down and give it up. And I thought, how beautiful is it that at the very end of the very final film, it starts where it begins, on Tatooine. And what does she do with Luke's and Leia's saber? She buries it. Because it's like, I don't need Luke's saber anymore. I have my own. And I thought that was really cool. And again, if you know the story history of having a yellow saber, what does that mean? I think it's kind of cool what Disney does with it. Who's to say? But it's just like, you know, well, but she's all alone. But is she all alone? And what does it mean to be powerful? Because she doesn't, she could have very easily said, hey, you know who I am? I'm the one who defeated the Emperor. But she doesn't. She goes back to Tatooine. And she doesn't even, that old woman who asks who she is, she says her name. And does that old woman do anything? What is the, probably the old woman's like, yeah, all right. And then, like, just leaves, right? And I just thought, how brilliant is it that you know, the good of everyone comes down to this effect of, it's like, you know, it's not about having the most power and doing what you want with it, but it's about using it well. And by using it well, it means being, you know, being willing to sacrifice yourself.
And going back to the whole raid scene, and there with Palpatine when she's down, and, you know, and he's like, you're all alone. And all of a sudden those voices start coming in. And it just reminded me of, in a sense, it's just, you know, going back to, there's more of us. We're not alone. You know, we're never alone. Yeah, the enemy wants to try to tell us that we're alone and that we're overpowered, but we're not alone. And I found it interesting was the people chosen to speak to her when all those voices were coming in. And I actually, you know, found someone that actually put down who they were and who was saying what, you know. And so it starts off, it's Obi-Wan saying, these are your final steps, Rey, rise and take them. And you have Anakin, Rey. And then you have the thing that really, really, to me, brought this whole thing together, is that they went into the animated series and brought those characters into it.
So Ahsoka Tano.
Yeah, after Anakin says Rey, it's Ahsoka, Rey. Kanan Jarrus from Star Wars Rebels, Rey. And Anakin, bring back the balance, Rey, as I did. And you have Luminara. Find a light ray. Kanan again. You're not alone. Yoda, alone never have you been. Qui-Gon, every Jedi who ever lived lives in you now. Back to Anakin. The source surrounds you, Rey. They brought Ayala into it. Let it guide you. Ahsoka again, as it guided us. And you have Mace. Feel the force flowing through you, Rey. Kanan Jarrus, let it lift you. Adi Gallia, rise, Rey. Qui-Gon, we stand behind you, Rey. Old Obi-Wan, Rey, Yoda, rise in the Force. Kanan, in the heart of the Jedi lies her strength. Rise, rise, and finally, Luke, Rey, the Force will be with you always. And to me, that bringing those characters, and the characters that were actually picked, were all characters that, in some way, shape, or form, had some type of sacrifice in order for the greater good. To me, with Dave Filoni, I know you had mentioned Dave Filoni before, you know, if Disney decides to promote him to lead for more live action, I can see that going, because he's basically, you know, George Lucas's, you know, Padawan, so to speak, where Kathleen was picked by George, but Dave Filoni was trained by George. And what he did with those animated series is just by far probably the best Star Wars storytelling in all of Star Wars, if you want to get into just straight storytelling with the characters, because he had time to develop them. But taking these characters and bringing them in there and using them, and to me, that was such a powerful scene to have those specific characters, because you had someone like Ahsoka who never actually made it to be a quote-unquote Jedi, who left because of, you know, standing up for what was right, and realized, you know, I'm one who thinks like Luke did in The Last Jedi, where the Jedi were wrong on many, many, many things. Like, the way they handled business, they were wrong on many, many things. They were right on a lot of things, but they were also wrong on many, many things. And, you know, Ahsoka is a character that I love because she stood up and went, you know, stood for what she believed in and said, you know, they are wrong, I'm going out on my own. But still chose to do good, still chose to be part of, you know, the rebellion and be part of, you know, at this point we can tell that she's not around anymore. I would love for them to do a series, you know, a live action series with her. You know, but what we see is this conflict where I'll go back and you know, piggyback on when you talked about how Luke went to redeem Vader and not kill him. I think why Rey is so willing to defeat Palpatine is because of all that he's done and already knows he's not redeemable. He killed his son and her mother, her father and her mother, just to destroy the world again, just to grab her to destroy the world. His idea of power is pretty much lording over people, and you do what I say, how I say, and this is what order is. And it's, you know, Thanos-like. If he could have snapped, he would have snapped. No, you know, you people are out of order, so I need to wipe everyone out so that the other can start over and be some better in the way I see fit. But it doesn't work that way. And Rey knew it doesn't work that way. You know, choose to do good, choose to love. And I think that's where everyone had written off Ben or Kylo. She kept seeing Ben. And that's where the redemption was for her. It wasn't for Palpatine. No, there was nothing before Palpatine. Like, no one knows what he was before he became a Sith Lord. You know, there is nothing, there was nothing there to redeem, because even coming back where he could have been like, oh, you know what, I messed up. He sat there for 30 some odd years planning to take over the galaxy again. And since he couldn't, what did he do? He built many Death Stars to just destroy everything. And so at that point, there is no redeeming quality in him. Mm. Where Ben, there was redeeming qualities. She saw the redeeming qualities. And a lot of times, yeah, we want to write people off sometimes based on what they've done in their past. But taking a step back, and as much as Rey started off really hating Kylo, when she discovered Ben, she knew that there was more there, and she did all she could to bring him back.
Thinking about power, you know, I think about the end scene, and, you know, I don't know the legends, and I don't know what a yellow lightsaber is. I had to look it up. And to me, it was just, I didn't realize it was her staff. Like, it just sort of came out of nowhere. But I will say this. After the defeat of the Emperor, of Palpatine, I think, even though, you know, again, what I love that they end on Tatooine, it has to end on Tatooine, the burying of the lightsabers, and the walking off into the desert, to me, actually is a form of true power. Because, again, you've, as they've said in the movies, they talked about balance. Mm. And now there are no more Sith. that we know about until they decide to make 10 and 11 and 12. Let's be serious. When all the other movies bomb, they're coming back. But she actually, you know, the temptation might be, for especially for someone with her familial DNA bloodline, to take more power. But she puts it away. It is a necessary evil for her in some ways. I do, you know, I will continue to work with the Force, but I am not a warrior. I'm more of a guardian. If I protect, but there's nothing to protect right now. There is no one out there that needs to be fought against. And I thought that was an interesting representation of power in this film, because it is the only film where somebody walks away for a positive reason. Rather than self-serving needs.
Quick hits.
Favorite moment in the film?
I have to say, I would go back to getting his medal. As much as I loved it, I felt there were so many moments in the film that I really, really liked. Every scene with Leia and Chewie getting his medal, finally, to me, it was the ultimate payoff of the whole saga in terms of, I guess, fan service, if you want to call it, but in terms of this is what Star Wars is.
The one that really sticks out in my mind probably the most is the end of the conversation between Kylo and Han, and that moment where he goes, you know, I don't know if I have the strength, and he throws the saber away. And he looks back, and there's no Han. Like, it is truly a memory, but, like, he's going to carry it, and then he goes. And now no lightsaber, no nothing, but he's still going to go. But now he's going as Ben. That was, to me, my one of my favorite moments.
I would say, for me, it was the ship where Kylo and Rey are pulling on the ship, and the laser the lightning comes, Force lightning comes out of her hand. I thought that was a great moment. And I thought, dang, like, again, they killed Chewie until they didn't. But I thought that was a great moment. Least favorite moment?
Actually, I'm going to go two. And it's basically, what was the point of the Knights of Ren if you didn't do anything with them? And the service that they did to Rose.
My least favorite moment was how quickly they got rid of General Hux. You build him up for two movies, you give him this really interesting arc, and then he's like, boom, dead. And I was like, ah, boo.
Yeah. There are so many to choose from for me. No. Skybeam. Although it looked cool to see the ships going down, and actually I was the only one in the theater actually laughing because I was like, dang, like that just sucks. And then I realized, I'm like, they resorted to Skybeam, and I was really mad. Skybeam. All right, boys, we need to screen it or skip it. Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, screen it or skip it.
Definitely screen it.
Definitely screen it. Come on.
I'm going to screen it a second time because I'm going to take my 9-year-old. I'm going to bring our lightsabers. I'm going to get dressed up. For the rest of you, go see Knives Out. And
not with a 9-year-old.
No, I'm not taking my 9-year-old to see Knives Out. And I'm going to cheer. See, maybe I'll like it better. I've heard people like it better the second time. I'll give it I want to enjoy it, but anyway.
That's what I've heard, like, the second or third time, all of a sudden that fast pace slows down for you because you're more attuned to the film.
Maybe.
We'll see. I'll see it again Christmas Day, so we'll see.
Okay.
I'm seeing it again tomorrow with my wife, who has not seen it yet.
Guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate having you guys both back on. This is great.
Yeah, it's been a while, but it was nice to be back.
Me too. Yeah, it's awesome doing it. Thanks, Steve.
No, thank you, guys. And, of course, for you at home, you can find us wherever podcasts are found. Podomatic, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can find us on your Alexa device via Stitcher. And if you go to the podcast page, screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, which is small group questions which can try and help you make sense of the film. I mean, process your enjoyment of the film, or whichever one it may be, after you've seen it. But we're going to take a break for the next couple of weeks because it's Christmas. We need a break. This is our last episode of the year, so we'll be back in a couple of weeks when we return with a look at 1917. So look for that in a little while. But guys, thanks again. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screen Push.